You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, now normally during this part of the program, we point you at the website and say, go to wpcouncil.org. And then I thought, well, why wouldn't we just not bother with that when we have wpcouncil.org in-house? So Josh DeMello is here. And one of the things we're going to do is not only give you an update on what things have been happening in the fishery lately, but where some of the concerns are. And more important, and many of you we know are getting ready for the summer and all of that stuff. There's some really neat summer things for people young and old to get involved in. We're going to talk about that a little bit today, but it wouldn't be fair, Josh, unless we mentioned how many people got impacted by the weather and by the floods and by the storm and everything else. And even though fishermen might have been out fishing, their families were in dealing with a whole bunch of stuff. So it's kind of a neat time to be talking about, you know, getting together and sharing the spirit and more importantly, sharing the catch.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And what we've seen happen just this past week, it just shows the magnitude of people coming together and the sense of community that we have here in the island.
One thing that I really am amazed about is how fast the ocean dissipates what we do to her. You know what I mean? I mean, we saw all of the runoff, we saw the brown water, and within a few days, it had kind of gone away. But isn't that still a reminder? Hey, there's a lot of stuff in this ocean that that we better stop doing. I mean, we can't expect that every time it's going to dissipate.
And they always say, right, there's some people that say, dilution is the solution to pollution.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
you're right.
But it's not really.
Maybe once it is.
Right.
Yeah, but not every day it is.
And we really don't know what's going to happen and what's happening. Just look at Kauai. What's going to happen to outside Hanalei Bay? Mm-hmm. You see the old pier is all full of sand now. It's sand all the way out. You can no longer jump. So what happens to that fishing area?
There's actually a new river.
Right.
You know, and so you're right. And one of the things, and this came up on Oahu, although you're right about Hanalei Bay. Recently, the day before the storm, a golf course closed. I mean, it had some financial difficulties and it closed. And it was the Olamana Golf Course. And one of the things that one of the Hawaiians that used to work there when they were putting it in was Bumpy Kanaeli. And he said, you know what? When you move around Mother Nature comes and takes it back sooner or later. Isn't that probably a pretty good idea of maybe what happened at Hanalei? It's been there before.
I'm sure that's the whole 50-year flood kind of idea. It's that, you know, that doesn't... Nothing happens for a long time. People start settling in there, and then all of a sudden that 50-year, 100-year storm comes through and wipes everything out. And then we'll see in the next 25, 50 years that people will still do that again.
And you know what? What Josh is talking about is true, and I don't want to dwell on it, but a couple of weeks ago there was this big unopening, this unearthing, if you will, when there was a massive tidal shift and sand movement on the North Shore, and all of a sudden these huge, beautiful petroglyphs that have been covered up by who knows for how long, or quick, everybody's taking up pictures because we know it's going to get covered up again.
And I think fishermen have seen this over the years, especially those that continue to go back to the same places over and over, even in places like Makaha Beach where everyone goes, oh, look, there's all these concrete barriers that are being exposed, and then later that year it's
covered up again.
Another 50 yards of sand.
But you know what's interesting to what you say is every now and again there's a shark attack or worry or concern that the sharks are moving in. Look what happened on the leeward side of Oahu recently with sharks taking advantage of what they could do and scavenge, come in and eat. So even though you change the shore around, the sea life finds somewhere to go. It doesn't disappear. It just moves.
And the increasing nutrients into the water from these heavy rains, I'm sure it's going to be great fishing for some people.
Yeah, exactly.
And, some of the debris that gets washed out is going to create these type of places where fish will congregate eventually.
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, gang, it's like there was this – the other night I was watching this program and I talked to this guy and he said, you know, it used to be that there were certain areas in the Ahapua where you had from the mountain to the sea where nobody cared about extra. They just took what they needed, and then if they needed some more fish to give to the guy to get some breadfruit, they did that. And I guess the main philosophy back in old Hawaii was take it when it's there, but make sure that your family's going to use it. If you haven't a plan for the fish, don't take it. You know, and it goes against our grain now because some people might say, yeah, but I'm not going to eat it, but I'm going to sell it. You know, so all of a sudden the resource gets pretty taxed, right? Because some people, it's more than just eating or trading. It's all sudden, it's also selling.
And that's the idea behind the democratic freedom that we have living as part of the United States. So that part of that is there. Part of it is, someone else is going to take it, right? So
might as well be me.
Yeah. Why let this guy who doesn't need the money go and take it and sell it when I can take it because I need to put my kids through school?
Somewhere there's the right balance on that, and we hope we can get to that. But one of the things that we're going to talk about here is some of the things coming up this summer. But I also want to go back because we had during the last session and what we were taking a look at and a mandate coming down to Hawaii, to Hawaii's fishery, that there were going to be certain fish that we are no longer able to sell to the mainland. Now, particularly, we're talking about billfish. Where is that standing right now? Because last week, many of you remember, we were talking to Bob Fram from Valia and Garden Isle Seafood, and he was talking about he's got a customer list on the mainland that really wants that product. And if they don't get it, they're going to get it from somewhere else. Isn't it only one of the billfish that we really are looking at as being threatened around our islands?
So,
like the stripey?
So the status of our billfish is a lot better than anywhere else in the world, really.
Yeah.
In the Pacific, our billfish are not in real danger like the ones in the Atlantic. So we're not overfished, we're not overfishing, and there's no threat of it being endangered.
But isn't it now scientifically sort of proven that the assessments are getting a lot more accurate than they used to be? And maybe we were discovering that, hey, when we were panicking 15 or 20 years ago about this fish or that fish disappearing, it hasn't. As a matter of fact, it's pretty much maintained its status.
A lot of that has to do with the data that's being collected for those stock assessments. Before, it was basically up to the honesty of other countries to say what's going on, because really, these are Pacific-wide stocks that are not caught just by the U.S., but caught by fishermen from nearly all around the world.
That's really important to note that, too. Interestingly enough, though, when we were talking with Bob Fram last week, one of the things that came up was what you need to do is get to your representative. At the local level, you just get to your House or your Senate member and then have them go to our delegation to Congress and say, hey, look, you got to go up and help us out on this, because it's an important job creator. It's important for a lot of things, but mainly it's something that shouldn't be stopped based on bad science or based on bad information.
And that kind of stuff, I can't speak to. That's the we appreciate and encourage people to get involved in the process, and that's part of the process, of course. So either way, if you have feelings either way, I think you should always be part of that process.
Yeah, and that therein lies the thing that, and everybody says this. I mean, we are it's a midterm election cycle coming up. Not anticipating being a huge, big, important election, but it is for all of us that go down to that big square building and want to get some changes made or want to get somebody to listen to this. But this is it really becomes important, like you said, whether you feel on this billfish issue, Josh, either way, if you don't say anything, others are going to make a decision. It may not be the right one.
And that's always been the lesson that I try to impart to both your listeners and other fishermen, is that if you're not being heard, things are going to happen without you, no matter what, no matter if you like it or if you don't.
We have seen a paradigm shift in the willingness of some of you listeners to be part of the process. As you know, every time the WP Council gets together and has a meeting, one of the features of that meeting is a Fishers Forum. And this last time was a real eye-opener. And it was based on us in the media getting in a panel and asking the audience what they wanted to hear, what they wanted to see, or how stories affect them. And I think that the takeaway was from that, all right, a lot of people are just sick and tired of letting other people decide when I can go fish or what I can go catch and everything else. And you're finding that there are venues and opportunities to do that. Once again, going to wpcouncil.org doesn't hurt.
And there's been meetings pretty much every month on different issues. And there's not just at the council level, but there's also at the state and the city levels. And there's so many opportunities to get involved.
Okay, this year there was another serious motion getting in front of the ledge to start looking at licensing and and registering of recreational fishermen and getting permits and getting tags and stuff that goes on in the mainland. And once again, the legislature, maybe it's because it's a midterm election, that none, I don't think any of those bills at this point are still alive, are they?
No, yeah. not that I've seen. Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with not really knowing mm-hmm. the importance, I guess, or the need of why that bill is in there. And then you get a lot of other voices saying, you know, this isn't what we want, but really there's a lot of a big swing in that idea that there really needs to be something done.
I think mainly because they haven't done a good enough job convincing all of us that this is necessary to enhance the fishery, not displace it. In other words, there's not funding for enforcement. There's a lot of things that need money thrown at it. And one of the things you can do if you have 50,000 people register as a recreational fisherman, then there's now you can have an extra ranger to police the people that are doing the bad thing. Nobody wants to, do the bad thing, but they will if they see people doing it and nobody seems to care. I'm hungry. He's taking little babies. I'll take some little babies. What's the difference?
And that's been the common complaint from a lot of people is that it's just another tax on people. Yeah, yeah. People are just sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah. Well, I reacted the same way, and many of you listeners did. And, by the way, later on in the program or earlier in the program, you heard we talked about trailer tips. Now that the IE season's coming up, you're going to trailer to this ramp, trailer to that ramp. The last thing you want is a car on the side of the road with a broken bearing. So we talk about that and other things. But I remember when that ramp sticker came out, remember that little triangular thing? Mm-hmm. I moaned and groaned. I didn't like it. That money got earmarked for and went to the ramps. And therein lies, I think most of us fishermen say, all right, I may not want to have a license, but if I know that you're collecting this and it's reasonable enough and it's going to help me be honest or be able to report somebody that's not being honest, okay, I'll do it.
And that's the problem. We can say that it will go to that. It'll go back to enforcement or education and outreach or something to do with the fishery. But as state and like all other governments, they'll raid what they can they can raid. And
Why the language has got to be. Some of these things die in committee this year because somebody didn't like the language. This isn't going to fly. This is going to get vetoed. Go back to the drawing board. I think that you can legislate stuff that is specifically cocooned or buffered. There are some things that. But at the end of the day, like you did say, restrictions are no restrictions. When people get desperate, oops, it goes into that big swamp called the general fund.
Right. And I think part of the problem is that when you do it through the legislature, you're actually just providing you don't have that full transparency that you would have compared to something like the Chapter 91 process, where it goes through the Board of Land and Natural Resources. And so by the legislature saying, hey, we got to do this, you're only going to get a few comments, and you get a lot of it is going to be comments from people on Oahu. Mm-hmm. But if you go through the states and the DLNR process to establish a license, then they'll be required to do public hearings on every island.
On every island.
So everyone will get a chance. So
that
so
to, works the best.
To me, I think that's the better way
to
do it.
It is. Well, maybe you can explain to people the difference between a rule and a law. Because, if the DLNR, DOCARE, DOBOR, whoever, they can make rules based on supporting laws. Make it so that whatever the law is enforceable through a rule. But a rule isn't a law. So, what we really need to do is have those that really know the fishery making rules that didn't get turned into a law.
Right. And that's always been some of these more active fishermen. The active fishermen are actually saying that, trying not to get the legislature to make rules or put in laws look like rules so that there's a more public transparency process for more people to get involved.
One of my fisherman friends says, here's the deal. You get these people that come up for whatever reason, they write a piece of legislation and they get support and it goes through the system. And there are hearings and everything else, but it seems like there should be a mandatory consulting of some of the stakeholders before hearing. Say, all right, how is this going to get interpreted? And then, let's not leave this up to chance, or let's not have that big, what do they call it at the end of the session, gut and replace?
Yeah.
Where they take something and what the heck did they do? That's not what I voted on 3 months ago.
Well, that's why I would hope your representatives are always talking to you somehow. I know mine sends out a newsletter at least two or three times a week, and and he's very responsive to emails that I sent him.
Yeah, and our guy out in Hawaii, Kai, same thing. I mean, if you're not talking story with this, but I think maybe, you know, and you can we can grouse all we want about the system. As bad as it is, it's a pretty good system, but it really does need in particular areas. And you can just imagine, if you don't like a fishing rule, what about a guy that's out of the archery range, or what about a guy that's walking his dog? They don't like the rules either. You know, that's why, and when we see this, and it happens over and over again, when you see the number of people that actually get out and vote, it's really disturbing, because not enough people go to those polls and say what they mean.
Well, and the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right?
I mean always.
Yeah. Just because it's squeaky doesn't mean it's broken, but the broken wheel may not squeak.
Amen. And Josh DeMello is a fishery analyst with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, and we get to hang out a lot on this program and talk about these issues. But one of the things I was saying in introducing us today, Josh, is that, you know, the website wpcouncil.org is a wealth of information. We got to remember that even though the legislative session is done, basically by the time people hear this, it's pretty much getting ready to wrap up. We'll tell everybody next week on some bills that we want you to scream about or say yes about. But what about what's going on? You guys have so many things that people don't know about coming forward in the summertime and all that stuff. I'm assuming that our summer session is going to be, again, we're going to have this wonderful thing at Moanalua School.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening with that?
So every year we put on a marine science course, high school summer course, for high school students to learn about marine science in the realm of fisheries, mm-hmm. and fishery science and management. So that's at Moanalua High School every year, and hopefully we can get the teacher to come in and
talk. Yeah, by the way, let's talk behind his back who this teacher is and the fact that he happens to be doing exactly what he wants to do. He's been able to get this program going, and we've had in the last couple of years, as you know, if you're listening to the program, we've had some of these young people in, and it is really amazing. Not only how they're already sort of getting themselves off in the right direction, but they are so hungry to learn stuff.
Oh, and just the amount of experiences that they get, they just write to us after year after year. Saying, oh, if it wasn't for this class, I wouldn't be able to do this, or I wouldn't have known that I could go into the Coast Guard or become a fishery scientist.
Well, I think what they find out about, and who knows how they get to the class, but when they get there, they find out, hey, wait a minute. When we talk about fishing, it's not always the guy that's out on the boat catching the fish. There's a lot more going on in this little thing called fishing.
And we've been doing it for over 10 years. So some of these students are graduated from college now. We have students that are actually working in the field. Yeah. We see students at our meetings testifying.
Yeah, I got to laugh. There was this one, and you know, when we talk about the last council meeting, when we had members of the media, we had print, television, and radio, private and government. And it was interesting to me, is there's one girl, I think, I don't know if she was a junior or 12 years older, one of those things, but she said, I don't listen to the radio, you know, like, and I'm thinking, what? You know, everybody listens to the radio. No, people don't. You know, they think in sound bites now. And that's why sometimes you got to worry when you hear that from a kid. Okay, I get that. I know that you like to do the social media stuff, but, you know, there's a little bit more out there. And that's why maybe some of these classes like Alton does are important.
And I think for us, it has a reciprocal effect, because mm-hmm. we're learning how to communicate back to these kids,
right? Yeah,
because
and they'll tell you, won't they?
Well, and the successful teachers will know how to talk to these kids. Mm-hmm. It's no longer just sit and lecture. You know, you have to relate it to the kids a lot more now. It's not showing you the math equation, because they grew up learning how to do math instead of that this is math. So it's a little bit different than from when I grew up or when you grew up.
You know, I got to tell you something. I remember when I was going to school, in some of our math classes, particularly in the early years, you weren't allowed to use devices. In other words, you had paper and pencil, right? And you had to do these long divisions and squares and everything else. And the kids today, they say you can't use a calculator. They say, why not? I mean, what's it for? You know, I mean, and it makes sense, right? When you think about it, why would you want to read an encyclopedia to find out what an elephant looks like when you Google it? And boom, here it is. You know?
Right, yeah. Right.
It's sort of interesting. In my business, in the radio business, you get a kick out of this, Josh, because we always look for ways to reinvent the wheel. a friend of mine who's a big-time disc jockey, a rock music disc jockey in Seattle, every day gives away really neat stuff on his program. He stopped doing it because the contest that used to run for 3 or 4 minutes, being able to gong people and dizz people and wrong and all of that, people just Google it. As he says it, they even have you can verbally Google it. And instead of waiting for your voice, you can put it up next to the radio. And the guy says, who was the first Beatle? Boom, the first Beatle was. Boom, and there's no contest because there's a quicker way. And don't kids want that? They're getting pretty smart.
It's all about instant knowledge, instant feedback and knowledge, you know. And it's not about actually learning it. It's more of what's the answer, because we already have something else going on. And that's probably a shame, you know, nowadays.
Yeah,
but that's how it is. There's just everyone's so busy that you got to have everything.
And that's one of the reasons, gang, that we point out that's not only about the summer program at Manalua, which you're going to learn about in the next couple of weeks for sure, because it's coming up. WPCouncil.org is a great a source for this. And the other side of it is, and there's a TV spot running right now, and it's about, I guess, a guy and his granddaughter, and they're sitting on the beach playing music at night in the camp, but they're fishing. And it may be that when you tell your kid we're going to go camp and go fishing, no, I got to go this concert, this, and we're gonna have the flash mob of this and the flash mob of that. Say, wait a minute, just go, you know, because our kupuna, they're willing to tell us stuff. Isn't the council learning more and more about this with the community-based management stuff?
I think that community-based management has just been, it's been taking off. And really, it's something done everywhere, but I think it's more formalized in Hawaii and the Pacific. And it's the wave of the future. And I know there's a lot of people that don't like it, a lot of people that don't think community should be managing those resources. Yeah. But I think if you can get all of those stakeholders or those people who are actually use those resources involved in making the decisions, then I think those people could be happy.
I heard something that was really exciting. And I guess when I was a small kid, I only knew a few people that fished on a neighbor island. You know, they went out on a boat, maybe they went from Hawaii Kai to Momomi Beach and go fishing. But not everybody could do that because the channel's rough, because mama says, you're not taking my son across that channel. But nowadays, the channel is 45 minutes. You get this big boat with 300 horsepower motors. However, the community-based management says, okay, if they are willing to accept science and stock assessments as part of their management, I think everybody will be happy. If they just say, don't come here because this is our ice box and it's empty, don't you think that's what sets up an adversarial relationship between a guy from Oahu and a guy from Molokai?
I think so, and I think then you get the Oahu guys going, well, Sears is on our island, so don't come to Sears to buy your lawnmowers or something. Yeah, yeah. But it has to be more than that. Yeah. It has to be, well, there's a problem that we're trying to solve, and the problem cannot be outsiders go home kind of thing. I mean, it's nice to think that you can, but it just legally you can't do it. And
there are some things that you could give us a good example of. Josh gets to hang out with everybody from CNMI and Samoa, from everybody. All of the folks come here, and I guess aren't some of them shocked at the way we treat each other and the way we go into somebody else's kuleana and try to go fishing? Isn't it sort of in that part of the world pretty much organized already, community based wise?
In other parts of the Pacific, they really haven't lost that sense of village distinct communities and villages, because they still have village chiefs or village mayors, and they still live by the clan system in some places like Saipan. So you even just walking between places, like I went to one of the golf courses in Saipan. Mm. It was nice. It was right there.
Yeah.
And we're wearing surf shorts and a tank top, and we didn't get kicked out. You know, we tried to do that at Hawaii Prince walking down in slippers and shorts or whatever, or, you know, going on to Wailea or something just to look around.
Interestingly enough, and we also found out from some friends in Fiji and other places, that if you're going to go surfing, they have to give you permission. If you're going to go fishing, they absolutely have to give you permission. But it's not something that's argued with. It's something that's the way it is. So it may be that our ability to go to another island and catch fish should be limited to the amount of fish that can be caught out of there, and certainly giving home rule a lot. But having science involved in it, it's a lot less of a sort of mental situation if it becomes physical. If it becomes, you know what I'm getting at? In other words, it's not just nobody can fish here because it's only enough for us. What if we don't know that? What if we find out, hey, you know what? There's so much fish where you are, you can't eat it. As a matter of fact, it's killing the reef. There's too many fish.
Yeah, and really that's the role of the konohiki in old Hawaiian society, mm-hmm. is to know how much fish you have and who can come and at what times. And I think we've lost a lot of that. We have konohiki that's still on the books.
Yeah, exactly.
And the families are still there, and it's in the law. I mean, we still have all those rights, but we just don't have the people with the knowledge anymore that can play that role.
One of the things that I got concerned about, and why we've tried to make a difference on this program, is that a lot of the kupuna, or the old timers, they don't want to impart that knowledge because in the past it bit them. And maybe now it's getting to a point where they're saying, okay, just in case what I have is valuable, I'll share some of it with you, but first I have to trust you. You got to show me that you're worth my trust.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's with a lot with fishermen too. Mm-hmm. And we've gone through that with the bottom fish fishery.
Yeah.
And the bottom fish fishermen realize that after seeing the initial stock assessments that, hey, we need to be truthful and make sure that all our data are included. Otherwise, you're going to have a low catch limit. And as they've seen from day one up until now, that inclusion of their data and being more precise in their reporting has resulted in a lot better stock assessment with a lot better number for them to catch.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with the council, and we can maybe understand that. And one of the people that we're going to be talking to real soon on the program is somebody that knows all about that. He's a bottom fisherman, Uncle Roy Morioka. As a matter of fact, let's quickly mention that every year these guys get together and they have a fishing tournament. And their tournament goes to places like the IHS, Institute for Human Services. And a fisherman gets to go fish, and there's prizes. Instead of getting money for selling his fish, they get a TV set. Or they get something from that. Isn't that a neat way that our fishermen actually see, hey, wait a minute, here are some local people, many of which probably haven't had fresh fish to eat for a year, 10, 5 years.
And I think that's just a reflection of the fishermen and what they've been doing. You said that the bottom fish was particularly credit to the council, but I think a lot of it, the credit goes to the fishermen for finally understanding that this is their fishery, and if they don't take care of it, nobody else will.
Yeah, those bottom fishermen particularly, because they know, right? I mean, we have these deep seven, we call them, and these people that are good at catching those things, they will refute your agreement or your decision about assessment based on their habits and their performance. But most of them say, hey, you know what? There's a lot of fish.
Oh.
You know? There's a lot of fish here.
And even if you go around here on Oahu and you go in the water, you may not see fish. But it might be the wrong time of year. It might be the wrong tide, the wrong moon, something.
Or they might be, you know, four reefs over.
Right.
Or not today,
right.
You know.
Right.
That's the part that I get a kick out of. Okay, now let's also talk about some of the other stuff, though. Coming off the back of the last meeting, getting through the legislation, what are some of the things people can learn about that are going on this summer?
So we're going to have our plan team meeting in a week or two, and we're going to talk about what's going on in the fishery, how the fishery is looking, and start that process of finishing our annual reports for 2017. So that these annual reports, and we'll come back and talk about them, it shows the trends in the fisheries, how it's doing, is fishing going up or down, catch up or down. But we'll be talking about that at these coming meetings.
Do the events of the day, such as someone to call this that we've just been through the last week, the storm of the century. Doesn't that figure into something sometimes? Somebody will say, you know what? This study was done before then. Since then, we've been able to determine it's not substantially changed, or it is.
So that's part of the whole annual report process, and then trying to identify why things happened the way they did.
Yeah.
So we have one chapter, that's the third chapter of our report, that looks at data integration. So we see something happening in the fishery. You look at a graph and the line's going down.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it going down? Well, it could be that there's less people fishing. It could be that there's just not a lot of catch. And so we look at other factors, like was it Were there more windy days in 2017 than there were in 2016? That's why there's a difference.
Go figure, right? Yeah.
What was the water warmer, or were there other climate variables that we aren't taking into account?
Yeah, were there king tides? You know, I mean, you know, all
the
king, these
the whole king tide thing. Yeah. And so we look at that. We look at the catch, and we try and put it together and integrate both data sets to see if they're either causation or correlation that could be.
Okay, you know, every now and again you'll say something and that a light bulb goes off in the back of my head. And Josh, by the way, Josh DeMello is a fisheries analyst, and he's really the steering agent at the Western Pacific Regional Fisheries Management Council that lines us up the content and the guests for this segment of our program. The thing that you just said is really important. When you go for a catch report, like for instance, if you go to the auction, at the end of the year, you know, at the end of the month, the end of the day, actually, you know exactly how many pounds came in, kind of where it came from, and what its value was, right? But when you talk about bottom fishing and some of these fish that are traded in between me with my breadfruit and you with your fish, if I don't go fishing because whatever the reason, my boat was too small, the water was too rough, the catch report is going to be smaller. And does that indicate shrinking stock or less people fishing? I never really gave that thought until right now. Can be both.
It could be both. Could be something else.
Yeah.
And the hard part for us is to know what that cause was that you didn't go fishing. It could have been that, you know, your wife told you couldn't go this weekend. But how do we know that? Yeah. We don't know that just by looking at the data. So we have to be able to collect that other type of information. So there are socioeconomic surveys that are put on by the National Marine Fisheries Service and other groups, and we take that and we look at we may talk to some of the fishermen that we know are the big fishermen that are catching a lot of fish and go, hey, we noticed the catch is down, what happened? And they might say, oh yeah, it's been down because so and so had his boat up in the dry dock all year.
And somebody says, hey, you know what? The fuel was so high and the water's been so rough. People go, I'll go wait till the water's nicer. If I got to spend all that money, I don't want to get sick.
Or for example, look at what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is usually towards the tail end of the bottom fish season.
It really
ends in September or August. But we're really, this is around the time that it changes into trolling for a lot of people. And then now you're seeing a lot of big yellowfins coming up just lately. So we would expect less bottom fish to be coming in right now and more yellowfin to be showing up. And it seems to be occurring that the bottom fish catch has been leveling off the past couple of weeks. And we know this because we've talked to fishermen.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another thing. As you know, and we're speaking with Victor Lozano, who's doing that spinners tournament, which used to be called the IE Fever. It's now called the Spinners IE Shootout. You're right. And a little thing like a broken bridge, and that means that 15 of the guys that were going to be in the tournament couldn't get there. And so that means that 15 less ahi got caught. Oh, the ahi, there's no ahi this year. No, there's not enough fishermen. There's plenty of fish.
And sometimes it's cyclical. Sometimes we'll see high this year and low next year. And fishermen know that. It's just we don't want too many low years.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, I think that most of us are optimistic. But I learn a lot, and we all do. It, particularly when we learned from some of the Kupuna, who they weren't as concerned about having the fancy new car every year. They weren't even concerned about owning a home. They just wanted to, you know, maybe rent something they could afford and be able to go down and catch their fish. And maybe sometimes in the instant gratification world we're looking at, we can step back, go to wpcouncil.org and find, hey, wait a minute. What if we simplify things? What if we make it a little bit easier? What if we don't all rush down to sell our fish so that we can buy a fancy new car if we don't need one every year?
And I know everyone thinks the council's there to regulate and take away our fishing and that.
I think it's the opposite.
Well,
I hope it is. Yeah.
I would hope that we wouldn't have to do anything. Make my life easier. And if we don't have to regulate, we will choose not to regulate.
It's only
in the really tough situations that we have to do something.
So we're going to get together in the next couple of weeks and shine the light on some really neat things that the council is doing. In the meantime, I want you to go to wpcouncil.org, and check out some of the stuff. We actually archive some of our previous shows on there, and we're getting them caught up to speed. So the good news is we'll get into Aaron and talk about the what's happening at Moanalua School. and Uncle Roy Morioka. We're going to talk about that in the tournament that they're doing to feed the hungry. And if you're hungry for more knowledge, do what Josh and I do all the time, just to make sure everybody's on the right track. Go to WPCouncil.org. And don't forget, you can either go there and leave a message, or you can email me, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. themikebuckshow@gmail.com. If you want something on the air during this segment, you let us know. We'll take care of it for you. All right. Have a great day fishing. If the water's brown, go further out. Go catch something nice. Have some fun. We'll see you next time. Aloha.